our speaker this evening, Rabbi Eliezer Krohn. He is a Rebbe in Beis Yaakov in Passaic. He is also teaches at the New York Seminary right here in Brooklyn. He has many shiurim on TorahAnytime.com. And for anybody considering hiring a mo'el for a bris, and, he is a full-time mo'el as well. Rabbi Eliezer Krohn.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Toke and Rabbi Mrs. Markowitz, for inviting me to come speak to you tonight. It's really a very special occasion, as was mentioned by Mrs. Markowitz and Rabbi Toke, how special the Sudas Mlava Malka and Zayin Adar for the Chevra Kadisha. And some of the points that I wanted to elaborate on were touched upon already by Mrs. Markowitz and Rabbi Toke. Actually, the custom that Mrs. Markowitz mentioned, I wasn't planning on saying this, but the custom that you mentioned about placing the shards on the eyes and the mouth actually brought back a memory of something that happened when I was about 5 years old. My mother, my parents who live in Kew Gardens, Queens, my mother is a member of the Chevra Kadisha in Queens. I'm sure you know of Rabbi Zone from Queens. He's one of the head of the Chevra Kadisha, so we're neighbors with them. And so we knew some of the customs that my mother used to, you know, to do by the Taras. And one time when I was five and my sister was six, my sister, of course not me, it was my sister, she broke one of the china's, the china dishes in the house, and she was all nervous that my mother was going to be upset. I said, "Don't worry, mom is going to be happy because she needs the shards for the Chevra Kadisha, for the Taras, so she'll use it for that." So we were very happy. I don't know if I was right, that much I don't remember. But definitely how special the Chevra Kadisha is. And we come tonight on the yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu, which according to my calculations is the 3,285th yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu. And there is a custom that on the night of, on the day of a yahrzeit, we mention something about that person and we grow from something that we could learn from that individual. Now the rabbis tell us that a dead person, a mace, is an oimid. Someone who stands still. Once somebody is not alive anymore, as you mentioned, they can't go higher in their level in Olam Haba. Whereas a person is a mahalich, a person is a goer. He's able to grow, he's able to do Torah and mitzvos. And it's based on a pasuk in Zechariah. It's also talking about the angels over there, that an angel can't go any higher. But the rabbis tell us that somebody who's not alive, there is one way that a person can go higher. And that is if their descendants or other people learn from them and take their good quality traits and grow from that, then that person can still continue to go high even once they are no longer alive, because what they have left over, their name and their good reputation, can have a positive effect on others and they can go higher. So as we learn from, that's why we have yahrzeit sudas and that's why we have shloshim, to remember the good qualities of somebody so we can grow from them. And that's something that we will talk a little bit about Moshe Rabbeinu and what we can grow from him. One nekuda is, it's in the beginning of, in Parsha Shemos, in the beginning of Perek Gimel, the psukim tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu saw the burning bush, the snap. And the pasuk says, in the beginning of Perek Gimel, Vayar Hashem kisar lirois. Hashem saw that Moshe turned to see the burning bush. And the Medrash over there in that pasuk says that sar zel lirois betzaron shel Yisrael. That Moshe Rabbeinu turned and he saw the pain and the suffering of the Jewish nation. And the Medrash says, Lefikach, therefore, Roi hu liyos roya aleihen. Therefore, he is befitting to be the shepherd and to be the leader of the nation of Klal Yisrael. And Abchatzka Levenstein points out that it was because of that, the Medrash tells us, not because of his knowledge and how great he was in wisdom and Torah knowledge that he eventually was, but because of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu cared for somebody else, that is the reason why he merited to be in charge of and lead the Jewish nation out of Mitzrayim. And this is nogea actually for Purim, which is around the corner. The psukim tell us, Haman told Achashverosh, when he was convincing Achashverosh that we should get rid, that he should get rid of the Jewish nation, he told them, he told Achashverosh, Yeshnoi Am Echad, there is one nation, Mufuzur Umufayra, that they're spread out. And the simple understanding is they don't have to worry about them, that they're spread out, they can't gang up against you. But the rabbis tell us that what it means is that they were spread out, that there was conflict, and people were separated they were divided, and they don't have any schusim, they don't have any merit to be saved from you, because they are divided, and they're not getting along one with another. And the solution to that was, Esther said, Leich kenoises kol ha-yehudim, to gather everyone together, and to bring them together, and in that merit, that everyone is together and getting along, then in that schus we were able to battle against Achashverosh. And it's only when we're connected, only when we realize that we are brothers and sisters, no matter what type of person a person is, whether Ashkenaz, Sfarad, Litvish, Hasidish, it doesn't make a difference. We are all brothers and sisters. I'll tell you a story that happened in the times of the Depression. Rav Moshe Scherer, who was from the Agudas Yisrael, used to say over the story that took place in the times of the Depression. There was a man who had two sons, and his sons were young, and one of them turned of age, he was turning 13 or 14 years old, and he called the older son in, and he told him, he said, listen, you know, times are tough, you're going to have to go out and make a living, you're going to have to go, you know, fend for yourself, you have to go get a job, find a way to make some money. So this boy went out, and right away he was very successful, he had a certain personality, he was smart, and he had good ideas, and he became successful very quickly. As he grew older, he became quite wealthy. By that time he had his own office, and he had a secretary, and he was doing very well financially. Once he started doing very well financially, he lost connections with his father. He felt he didn't need his father anymore, he didn't need his family, his brother anymore. He was on his own, and he was able to take care of himself. The younger brother got a little bit older, also he came of age, and his father called him in and said, you also have to go out and you have to take care of yourself, you have to find a job. So he said, where am I going to go? So he said, I don't know, you have to find something. So he figured, where could he go? The first address he went to his older brother, maybe he could, you know, train him in, maybe he could help him in the job, maybe he could give him a job. He knocked on the door, the secretary says, yeah, what's your name? He says, tell your boss that, you know, his brother is here to see him. She goes in, the message comes out, he says he doesn't have any brother. He says, what do we mean he doesn't have any brother? It's me, Yaakov. How could he say he doesn't have a brother? He says, no, he doesn't have any brother. He doesn't know. You're not invited in. So he pushed his way in. He said, he barges into the office. He says, you don't recognize me? What are you talking about? You don't have a brother. I need your help. He says, I lost all connections with my family. I don't have any family anymore. I'm on my own. Fine, he left. You know, he was so sad. He didn't know what to say. What could he do? A short while later, the father took a turn for the worse, and he realized that his days were limited. And he sent a message to his two sons that he's on his deathbed. And the father had an inheritance to give over. He wasn't necessarily a rich man, but he had an inheritance to get over. So all of a sudden, the older son, he comes in, and the two brothers come together, and the father says to the younger son, have you been? I haven't seen you in a few years. I sent you out to get a job. I haven't seen you. And he's talking. How's your family? Did you get married? Do you have children? And he was talking and talking. And this older son is sitting right there, and he's being ignored. He doesn't understand. He's like, you know, Dad, it's me. I'm here. And he turns to him, and he says, who are you? He says, well, what do you mean, who am I? I'm your son. It's me. You don't recognize me? He said, this person over here, he is my son. If you're not his brother, then you can't be my son. And what he was telling him is that we're all together. And if you two are not, if you are not brothers, and that's what Hashem says to all of Klal Yisrael, if a person can't be a brother to somebody else, then you can't be considered my son. We're all part of the Jewish nation, we're all connected, and we all have our customs, and wherever walk of life we come from, but if we're all in the Jewish nation together, we are all connected. And so many times we don't feel like that. Sometimes you find people that they don't feel like they are a brother with the other person. Why is that? They're a bad person? It's just simply that people are very busy. They live very busy lives, whether it's with parnasa, whether it's with family. They have so many things on their mind. And so many times a person doesn't have the wherewithal. They don't stop and think a chesed for somebody else. You're talking about the chesed shalemis, but to think how you can help somebody else, a kind word to somebody else. I think I can mention something about a basketball player. I used to play basketball a lot, and there was once a basketball player who was playing in the NBA. I'm not going to say what color his skin was, but one of his coaches said about his player that this player is very selfish. So those of you who know how it works, of course, the media, they wanted to make a story. They always need something to write about. So they quickly went to this player and said, did you hear, you know, your coach, he said you're a selfish player. So he said, well, I don't know what he's talking about because I don't think about anybody except for myself. So what does that mean? That if a person, you know, he doesn't care about anybody else, he doesn't think about anybody else, what they're doing, he needs to take care of himself, then a person can't have that achdus and have the togetherness with somebody else. I'll tell you something very interesting, and I don't mean to paskin anything lahalach over here. I do give halacha classes, but this is not that type of thing. I learned in Shahar Torah in Queens, Kew Gardens, Queens. That's where I grew up. And so my Rosh Hashiva in Shahar Torah, his name was Abzalah Gepstein. I'm sure many of you have heard of him. He lived here in Brooklyn. And his decision, now he didn't mean to paskin this for all boys, but at least for his talmidim, his students in the yeshiva, his ruling was that when you date a girl, you have to agree right away to go out twice. There's no such thing as saying no to a girl after one time. Now, of course, if the girl says no to the boy, so then there's not much, you're not going to force her to go out again. But as far as the boy is concerned, you can't say no after one date. And I actually learned this, the hard way, because I one time said no after one date to a girl, and I thought that the reasoning for his ruling was that, you know, hey, you never know, you know, give it a shot, you know, don't say no after, you know, crazier things have happened, try again, give it, you know, give it a chance. I thought that was his reason, but I found out that that wasn't his reason. His reason was because you cannot make somebody feel bad, especially with the whole shidduchim going on. A lot of times girls have a very hard time to find dates, and she could be distraught if she's told no by a boy after one date. You have to go out a second time. Now again, he did not mean, and I for sure don't mean to say that this has to be for everybody, but that was just such a sensitivity that he ingrained in all of his students, that you can't say no to a girl after one date. It will make her feel bad. You have to give it another chance. And this is, he was coming from somebody, obviously, who was machshev Torah, and the person, a boy, had to miss learning in yeshiva to go out a second time. Still, person, you have to go out a second time. And this is, you know, so true. We're talking about, you know, Zayin Adar and the Chevra Kadisha, as far as somebody being Menachem Avol. You know, so many times, I know my father mentions this sometimes, so many times a person comes to be Menachem Avol, and sometimes, you know, it's uncomfortable. You're not sure what to say. I mean, sometimes you know the person that you're coming to be Menachem Avol, but you didn't know the parent. So what are you supposed to say? And I think Mrs. Markowitz had a great line that, what do you say, silence is gold? That sometimes it's better not to say anything. You know, if you don't know what to say, if a person doesn't know what to say, so they feel like they want to say something, but if you don't know what to say, sometimes it's better just to be silent. As somebody told me, that his parents, both of his parents, are actually not alive anymore. His father passed away, and his father passed away on Motzei Yom Kippur. Now, the Gemara in Ksubis, Daf Kuf Gimel Amud Beis, says that somebody who passes away on the night following Yom Kippur, Motzei Yom Kippur, it says that it's a simen yafaloi. It's a very special sign for the person, because that's a sign that his sins were forgiven. So this person came. He knew him, but he didn't know the father, so he didn't know what to say. So he told the person sitting shiva, "Wow, you know, your father died on Motzei Yom Kippur. What a schus!" So he said, "Mitzvah by you." So he told me that he was very upset. He didn't like that. Now, of course, this person didn't mean anything bad. Of course, he was trying to say something positive, but he didn't take it that way. My aunt, she told me that, and my father has a sister whose husband passed away, my uncle, and she told me, I was, you know, talking to her about this topic, and she told me that by her husband's levaya, which I missed because my father had a bris that morning, and my father had to run to the levaya, so he gave me the bris, and I went to the bris instead, and my father had to be at the funeral at the levaya. But my aunt told me that, of course, they had hespedim, they had eulogies for my uncle, who was a tremendous talmid chacham, he was a rebbe, and they had many talmidim, and the hespedim, of course, were great, the eulogies were great, and someone went over to my aunt as they were carrying the coffin, and they said, wow, it was worth it to come just to hear the hespedim. Now, what he meant was, like, he was busy, but it was such incredible eulogies and how uplifting it was that it was worth it to come just for that. She told me she was furious. She said, "It was worth it for my husband to die so you could hear such a great eulogy?" Now, of course, that's not what the person meant, but she was in a very emotional state, understandably. But a person has to be so careful what they say to a person. And I'll tell you a story. Once happened with me. I was a bacher in the Mir. I learned in the Mir in Yerushalayim by Rav Nosson Svi Finkel. We were very close. And when I was a boy, before I was married, I learned there 5 years after I was married. But I learned there for 3 years before I was married. And I used to eat out by people's houses. And one of my friends got married, and he lived in Israel for a few years after he was married. And I ate by his house one Friday night. So he introduced me to his wife. And his wife was from a certain neighborhood that there's another crone in that neighborhood. So she said, "Oh, your name is Crone. Are you related to this and this person?" So, "Oh, this is my second cousin. I don't really know them very well." So she knew my name was Crone. I mean, that's clear. She, before the meal. So during the meal, at one point, my friend said over a story. Now, this story was in the Maggid Speaks. My father, Pesach Crone, wrote numerous books, the Maggid Speaks, around the Maggid's table, many wonderful stories. And my friend told this story. It's one of those stories that's just like an amazing ending, like you can't believe it really happened. It's just incredible. But I didn't want to embarrass him and tell him that, you know, it's in my father's book, because maybe that would embarrass him that he didn't know it's in my father's book. And so I didn't say anything. So it was one of those great stories. And another one of the bachrim at the table said, "Is that a true story?" So he said, I heard it's a true story. They say it's a true story. So once already they were doubting if it was true or not. So then I said, no, I know it's true. It's in the Maggid Speaks. So his wife said, "Oh, that doesn't mean anything." And he knew who I was, and all the other Baruchim knew who my father was, and like they were like, "Yikes." And then she realized that was my father. She said, "I love your father. He's like he's such a great speaker." But I said, "Don't worry, you know." But here, it happens to be I wasn't so insulted, because I know that's what people think. People say, you know, you write a storybook and you don't check out if the truth, the details are all true. My father always makes sure he speaks to the person, that it happened to. He always makes sure to get the details and all the true facts. But here, that's something that, you know, she had no idea. She didn't mean it on purpose. But it's something that she really put her foot in her mouth. And before I left, she apologized again. I was never invited back, that's for sure. But She felt terrible, but did I want to go back? Yeah, I don't know. But no, the food was good. I would have gone back. I would go anywhere. When you're a bacher, you go anywhere. But this actually just reminds me. Today my parents were by me for Shabbos and Pesach. I actually drove my father here to Brooklyn also, because he was speaking somewhere else. So we were talking. My father's good friends with Rabbi Wine, who is another great speaker. And so his name came up over Shabbos. So one time, I was just thinking about putting your foot in your mouth. I was one. He lives in Eretz Yisrael now, so I became very good friends with his grandson Gettinger, from South Bend, Indiana, originally. And so he brought me to his house in Rehavia. I ate by his house also one Friday night. So right then, Robert Wine had put out a video about Rashi. You know what I'm talking about? He put out about a half hour, it's a biography on Rashi, but it was like animated. It was like caricatures, and it was very interesting. On that video, he puts in that Rashi's daughters wore tefillin. So, you know, Robert Wine is a historian, and it's brought down that it is true that Rashi's daughters wore tefillin. And I teach girls. I teach in the Beis Yaakov Asek, I teach halacha in the New York Seminary here in Brooklyn, and I teach to married women. And it's a topic, you know, the mitzvah says my grandma, that always comes up about lulav and sukkah and shofar and tzitzis and tefillin. So women volunteer to shake the lulav or to sit in the sukkah and to hear the shofar. But the custom is that for tzitzis and tefillin, that's not the case, for whatever reason, not for now. But he put in that. So I was watching that video once, and there was somebody who was very upset about, you know, why do you have to put that in? Even if it's true, why do you have to put that in? Fine. So when I was sitting at their table, of course, the topic came up about that video, because it had just come out. So I had forgotten that he was the one that made the video. So I said, I was talking to someone, and they were upset that they put in that Rashi's daughters wore tefillin. So Rabbi Wine said, "Well, you know, that's the truth, so that's why I put it in." I was like, "Yeah, that's what I told him, yeah, for sure, you know." So, a person has to be careful, yeah? A person needs to think before they talk. And so many times, when we see somebody else, and we jump to conclusions. We think that we know the entire story of what's going on, and right away, so many times, we jump to conclusions. I know for myself that, I see the Fruchters here. I had this chus of doing their grandson's bris a few years ago. And I joke with my wife, that I usually am not supposed to look at women. But I notice in Passaic, I notice who's expecting. I just happen to naturally, since that's my parnasa. So I happen to notice, you know, which ladies are expecting or not. I don't talk to them. I don't give them my card or anything like that. I think that's too upfront. But I do happen to notice who's expecting. So one time I noticed a friend of mine whose wife was expecting, and fine, I wasn't going to say anything, but of course, so they're going to use me as the moyel, and I'm a good friend of his, we're neighbors and we're friends. I hear, someone told me, next week someone told me, oh, you heard so-and-so, he had a baby boy. I'm like, oh, very nice, mazel tov, yeah, I happen to notice that his wife is very nice. I have my cell phone, and I'm waiting for the phone call, it gotta be fine, and then no one calls. Sometimes you don't call the mother the first day, sometimes they wait till the baby comes home from the hospital. No phone call. Days go by, more than 8 days go by, and no phone call. Fine, so I said, what's going on? I thought we're friends, what is this? A couple weeks later, I bump into him in shul or something, and I say, oh, I heard you had a baby, mazel tov, very nice, very nice. Yeah, thank you very much. You should have a lot of nachas. And I said, oh, who is the mayel? So he said, what do you mean? I had a girl. So this person who had told me that said that he had a boy made a mistake. It really was a girl. And this whole time, for 2 weeks, I can't sleep at night because I'm thinking, what an idiot. How come he didn't use me? Fine, it was a mistake. He had a girl. So when so many times we jump to conclusions and we think we know the whole story. I mean, this guy had a boy. I'm saying, what else is there to know? What other research do you have to do? But so many times we don't know the whole story. I once heard a beautiful pshat. If you're really familiar with the Nega of Tzaras in Parshas Tazria, Mitzara, we talk about the psukim bring about leprosy. And of course, as you all know, this leprosy that the psukim in the Torah talk about is not just a physical disease. This is something the Gemara tells us that it's based on. One of the sins that it comes for is for the sin of lashon hara, of slander, of speaking bad about somebody. Now, where the leprosy forms is on a person's skin. There's other ways, on a person's garment or in a person's house, but it comes on the skin. And I once heard a beautiful pshat from my Rish Kollel in Pesach, Reb Zev Rifkin, and he said a very nice, a very interesting explanation. He said, why on the skin? He says, because a person said lashon hara about somebody else. So many times, why does a person say lashon hara? Because they think that, oh, I see what that person did. They must be a terrible person because I have the whole situation summed up already. But so many times we don't know the whole situation. We don't know what's going on inside that person's body, inside the heart, or inside the brain. That's why it's on the skin, because the skin covers over and it hides the heart and it hides the brain. We don't know what's going on in somebody else's life. The word, the Hebrew word for skin is ar, ayin vav resh, and that's the same letters for iver, which means blind. Because the skin blinds everything that is in the body. And the English word, for at least by animals, what's the English word for the skin is a hide. H-I-D-E, to hide. Because also that hides what is inside the body. And there's many body parts in Lashon HaKodesh that the body part, the name of the body part, is similar to something that it means. Like the oizen is the ear and the maznayim is a scale, because the ear is the balance, is controlled in the scale. The kaved is the liver, because kaved also means heavy. The liver is the heaviest organ. Many, many body parts that are connected with that. The shein is the tooth, because shinui means to change, because the tooth changes the food from solid, and it changes it down. Shnaya means two. People have two sets of teeth, the baby teeth and the regular teeth. There's others that are escaping me right now, but there's many body parts. And the iver is the hide, because we don't know what is going on inside somebody else's life, and that's why we have tzaras on the skin. I'll tell you an amazing story that a friend of mine told me that happened with him, and he was a number of years ago. He was, one summer, he was in the city, and he wanted to go up to a certain camp that he had friends in for Shabbos. His friends were in this camp the entire summer. He wasn't in that camp, but he wanted to go for Shabbos. So he got special permission to visit just for Shabbos. There was an open bed for Shabbos, and he got permission to eat the meals over there. So he was there up in the Catskills in this camp, and Friday night after the davening, so everybody would walk around the shul saying good Shabbos to the Marid Asra of the camp, that particular camp it was, or the head counselor, and everybody was walking around, and he noticed off to the side there was one boy who wasn't walking around. He wasn't walking around. Everybody else was saying good Shabbos to the head counselor, giving respect, giving honor, giving cover. He wasn't walking around. not only wasn't he walking around, but he was leaning on the shtender. Here's the shtender, and he was like leaning back on the shtender, like a real cool guy. And he said his hat was up, and he was wearing a black hat, but his hat was perched up, and he had a big chup on his head, a big load of hair on his head, and he looked like a cool cat, and you know, everybody's walking around to say Good Shabbos, and he's not going anywhere, he's just leaning back on the shtender with his hat up. And it bothered him, like, who does this guy think he is? He didn't know who he was, you know, he was just a guest for Shabbos. So his friend that he went to visit for Shabbos, he said, you know, who is this guy? Who is this boy? Who does he think he is? He says, oh, him. He says, he never has yana machla. He has cancer. And he's so weak that he can't even walk around the Beis Medrash, around the shul, to say Good Shabbos. Not only is he so weak that he can't walk around the shul, but he can't even stand straight up. He has to lean against the shtender. You see, you'll notice he's leaning against the shtender. He can't even stand straight up without leaning on the shtender. And because of all the chemo that he's been having, he lost all the hair in the back of his head, and he's so embarrassed about it that he puts his hat back up to cover the back of his head, and the hair in the front of his head, that, you know, he doesn't want to get a haircut because he's losing the hair in the back of his head, so he keeps extra hair in the front and he keeps it out, so, you know, he try not to be noticeable. And my friend told me, he said, every single thing that he was bothered by with this guy was all answered up in 1 second, because he thought he knew the whole story, but he really had no clue of what was going on. He had no idea, and he said it was such a lesson in Dan Lekav's Chus. And it's really, if you think about it, it's a very scary thought. It's something that always, you know, makes me think that the same way we're always talking and thinking about other people, people are always talking about us. Always. You know, you see somebody in the supermarket, or you see someone in the show, you say, oh, I was just talking about you. I'm like, you know, it's a scary idea that people, whenever someone says that to me, I always say the same joke, ah, no lashon hara, you know, you have to be careful. You know, people are talking about you. I'm like, what are they saying about you? So the same way, when we talk about somebody else, you know, we have to keep in mind that people are talking about us also, and we wouldn't want somebody to judge us. Let's say we had a rough day, or, you know, we're in a bad mood, and we wouldn't want people to judge us if they don't know the whole story. So too, before we talk about somebody else, we have to be careful with what I want somebody saying this about me. One time, you know, I had, as the Rav mentioned, and I have the schus of teaching in the Beis Yaakov of Pesach. I teach in the 11th grade, I teach halacha, hilchos brachos, and Shabbos. So last year, not this year, but last year, one of the students in my class was my cousin. My wife's cousin lives in Passaic. And so one of the students was my cousin, a good girl. And so a couple of months into the school year, I saw her by a family simcha. And I said to her, I was just curious. I said, does the rest of the class, do the classmates know that that we're cousins? She said, yeah, they know we're cousins. I said, oh, so like, you know, if they have something bad to say about me, they wouldn't say it in front of you. She said, no, they would say. So I was like yikes, I hope you're not talking from experience, you know. But people, and especially about a teacher, you know, people, students always have something to say about teachers. That's just the way it is. But people are always talking about you, and it's so, you have to be so careful when we talk about other people. Person has to keep in mind that the same way we're talking about others, people are also talking about us. And it's really supposed to be the opposite. You know, when we thinking of other people, we say in davening every morning, you open up the siddur, you'll see the two paragraphs says Elu Dvarim, and the second paragraph says that it lists mitzvos that Adam Ochel Peroseim Ba'Olam Hazeh, that a person eats from the fruits of these mitzvos ba'olam hazeh, v'hakeren kayemes la'olam haba. But the keren, the base, you know, the reward, that will stay also in olam haba, in the next world as well. And what is special about this list of mitzvos? That we get reward in this world and the next world. So the Gemara tells us that the Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Chav Zayin, that these mitzvos are tov la'shamayim, but tov la'brio. So it's good to heaven because they're mitzvos that Hashem wants us to do, but it's also good for other people. It's also good for other people. And some of them are obvious, hachnasas kala, hachnasas orchem, levois hameis, and bikacholim. Those are obvious why it's good also to other people. But one of them is iyun tefila, to concentrate by davening. Why is concentrating by davening a mitzvah to other people? It's obviously a mitzvah to Hashem because we're supposed to daven with kavana, but why to other people? And the answer is obvious. If you notice, all of Shemona Esrei is in plural. is in plural. We're supposed to be davening for other people. Even if we don't need a refuah shleima, but we're supposed to daven refuah shleima for others. Even if, let's say, we don't need a parnasa, we're supposed to be davening for other people. Always supposed to be having in mind another person. And that is something that the Chevra Kadisha stands for, the dignity of another person. As Mrs. Markowitz mentioned before, how the Chevra Kadisha and people who do the Taras, and how special it is, a Chesed Shel Emes, that to take care of the dignity of another person. As was mentioned, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself took care of Moshe Rabbeinu and gave him the proper dignity, that to realize that whether a person is alive or not, how each individual is special, and Chesed Shel Emes with no ulterior motives, and that's how special the Chevra Kadisha is. We'll just end with this. The Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, says that in the schus of Machtes HaShekel Nigalu, in the schus of the mitzvah of giving the half of a shekel, we were redeemed. And we give that on Rosh Chodesh Adar. Nowadays we give it on Tainis Esther. It's a custom. And because of that, when Haman weighed Aseres Alafim Kikar Kesef, that was able to counterbalance, that was able to fight against the fact that Haman weighed all those shekels. When we do the mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel, of giving the half shekel, the donation, that is supposed to fight and counteract that, what Haman did. And the question is why? What's special about the Machzis HaShekel? And one reason given is the following. The Al-Sheikh says, why do we give a half of a shekel? The Al-Sheikh says, because we need to realize that we are half, we're not a whole person by ourselves. We are connected to everybody else. We only give a half because we are half of a whole. We have brothers and sisters that we need to feel connected to. And that's what happened by Purim. Like we said before, that there was conflict and they were separated and we needed to be brought back together. We were mufuzir mufayrid and we needed to be connected together. That was able to neutralize and to offset that sin that we did, that we did not have the achdus and we're not caring for another as we were supposed to. And that's chus and the lesson from Machzis HaShekel, to keep together and being careful of how we deal with others. That is something that Purim teaches us, and that is something that the Chevra Kadisha teaches us as well. The Gemara in Shabbos Daf Peches says that in the times of Purim, kimu mashe kiblu kfar, they accepted what they had already accepted by Har Sinai. As you all know, by Har Sinai, we had the Achdos. Vayichan Shom Yisrael Neged Ahar. Vayichan is singular. We were together, ke'ish echad, b'lev echad, all together. The Archaim HaKadosh, in the beginning of Parshas Tetzave, says, brings from the Zohar, that in the Schus of Moshe Rabbeinu, we're going to have the final Geula. There are four Golios, and in the Schus of Moshe Rabbeinu, we will be redeemed from this final Golos. So we daven for Mashiach, and we should be davening for others, and we daven also for Mashiach every single day. In the Schus of Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Ayin Vav Mabei, says that Oyev Eshchena V'Amekarev Eskroivav, someone who loves his neighbors and is kind to others and deals in Chesed, Alav Nemar Oz Tikra V'Hashem Yana. Upon such a person, we say that he will call out and Hashem will answer. In the Schus of being kind to others and chesed to others and not judging others and being kind to others through chesed shel emes, especially with the Chevra Kadisha and through the schus of Moshe Rabbeinu, all of our tefillahs should be answered, and our tefillahs to bring Mashiach should be answered. A good tevach. Thank you very much.